Beresh Harmonuta de Malka, Galif Gilufe Bitihiru Ila'a, Botsina de Cardinuta Nafik, Gostim de Stimu, Miraza de Ensof.
This is the Zohar.
Kutra Bagulma, Naitz Beizka, Lachivar, Vlaukam, Lasumak.
Written during the 13th century, its contents are the bedrock of a Jewish mystical tradition called Kabbalah.
Aved Gavnin La'anhara.
The Aramaic language here is being read by Berkeley scholar Daniel Matt. He spent almost two decades translating the Zohar and writing commentary to explain it. That's a long time, but the Zohar is a massive book. When complete, the new work will total 12 volumes, each hundreds of pages long. Matt is responsible for most of that. For centuries, the Zohar's mystical teachings held a central place in mainstream Judaism. It was a guidebook to a closer relationship with the divine, for connecting to something larger than our small human selves.
Beka v'la beka avira dile, la'ichida klal, ademigo d'chiku d'vekiute.
The Zohar is central to the Hasidic branch of ultra-Orthodox Judaism. Madonna also brought fame to the Kabbalah Center in Los Angeles. But for the most part, the Zohar's teachings are unknown. In part, it just dropped out of style. But also, for a long time, there was no good English translation. Basically, if you wanted to study Zohar, you had to know Aramaic. Jesus spoke Aramaic. What if no one had translated him?
Bereshit, in the beginning. At the head of potency of the king, he engraved engravings in luster on high.
This is Rabbi Aubrey Glazer. He's an early adopter of Daniel Matt's new translation, and already he's brought it to the attention of his synagogue, Congregation Beth Shalom in San Francisco.
From the head of infinity, a cluster of vapor forming in formlessness, thrust in a ring.
Every Saturday, Glazer holds Zohar study sessions. Each week, he reads a passage from Matt's translation, which has been released volume by volume since 2004. He tells congregants not to try and understand everything, but to listen and let whatever images come up.
As a chord surveyed, it yielded radiant colors deep within the spark, gushed a flow.
The Zohar is a provocative book, and Glazer says, really, for the first time, the translation makes its ideas accessible to an English-speaking audience.
How people imagine the Big Bang occurred. Right? What was it like at that moment, just before the millisecond, before creation and the world came into being?
Not white, not black, not red, not green, no color at all.
Its answers are often less literal than visceral.
It split and did not split its aura, was not known to all until under the impact of a splitting, a single concealed supernal point shone.
Maybe you can hear. The Zohar is highly enigmatic. Glazer says it's like jazz. Maybe you don't know where you're going, but you can get lost in ethereal worlds that grab hold of imagination and heart. And some of its ideas are pretty radical. How is God described? Forget that old man in the sky. The Kabbalist God includes male and female parts. The Zohar also describes God as being beyond gender, as infinite, boundless.
As to why it's reemerging now, it's a great question. And to me, it seems like it's part of the zeitgeist. The Jewish world has been moving in the direction of, and perhaps more oscillating, between an embrace and a repression of the mystical.
In the 19th century, Jews began to reject the Zohar's teachings as superstition. But then in the 1960s and 70s, Buddhism and Hinduism arrived in the West, bringing spirituality more into vogue. Separately, scholarship on the Zohar also appeared. Jews realized they had their own rich, mystical tradition to draw on.
It's something that now is reemerging with great force and bravado, and thanks in no small part to the remarkable, remarkable work of Danny Matt.
I had been working on Zohar for many years. I had actually translated selections of it many years ago.
Daniel Matt says he had no intention of doing the full translation. He fell in love with the Zohar as a young man in college. He wrote a few books about it. And back in the early 1980s, as a young professor at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, he finished translating what he says was about 2%.
And ever since then, people said to me, well, when are you going to do the other 98%? And I would say, well, I don't want to spend the rest of my life translating the Zohar.
Then a friend, a famous Zohar scholar, called in 1995. He said a rich Chicago family, the Pritzkers, who owned the Hyatt Hotels, wanted to fund a full translation. Matt's first impulse was to say no. He thought, it would just be too hard.
Beresh Hermanuta de Malka, Glif Gilufe Betihiru Ila'a.
As a translation project, the Zohar has unique challenges. Its origins go back to 13th century Spain, when a man named Moses de Leon claimed to have discovered a bunch of ancient manuscripts. Today, scholars believe de Leon himself was the primary author. Their evidence is the Zohar's unique style. It includes smatterings of Hebrew and Spanish, and it's written in a strange Aramaic with made-up words. But it wasn't just the bookish part that made Matt nervous. There were also the spiritual demands.
There are intellectual tools you need. You have to know what the words mean. You have to use dictionaries. You have to look up passages in the Bible.
A word of Torah emerges from her sheath, is seen for a moment, then quickly hides away.
But to make sense of the Zohar, you're really exploring your own mental and spiritual world. And that's really why the Zohar is so challenging. You're not just studying what's out there on the page.
She opens a little window in that secret palace where she is, reveals her face to her lover, and quickly withdraws, concealing herself.
You're really constantly testing it and trying it out within.
Matt felt like he just wasn't up to it. But then that call came, and he agreed to meet with Margot Pritzker. She had been studying the Zohar with a rabbi.
They were using an older English translation, what's known as the Sansino translation, which was done in the 1930s. It's known as more of a paraphrase than a translation.
It also has no commentary, no explanation of the Zohar's abundant but obscure metaphors.
One of them said to the other, let's do a new translation. We met and I basically walked into the meeting trying to talk them out of it. And I gave my reasons why it was so impenetrable and challenging. But at one point, Marco Pritzker said, look, I understand your hesitation, but if you did do it, how long would it take? And I said, 12 to 15 years. I mean, I was just, you know, trying to be honest, but realizing in my mind that was, you know, just interminable. And Margot said to me, you're not scaring me. And somehow when she said that, something clicked inside of me. Maybe it was almost a dare. Like she was saying, I'm not scared. How come you're scared?
Daniel Matt retrieves a well-kept cardboard box from his bookcase in his study. Inside, carefully wrapped in tissue paper, is a thick book bound in royal red. It's a gift from Margot Pritzker, from after he finished his 9th and final volume a few months ago. With reverence, he runs his fingers over the still dark black ink.
Okay, this is a first edition of the Zohar. It was published in Italy in 1558. There were actually two competing publishers that put it out within the same year or two in two Italian cities, in Cremona and Mantua. And this is really one of the rarest Jewish books in the world.
Matt points to the 450-year-old title page of his first edition copy. It's an intricately drawn gate.
It's called in Hebrew the Sha'ar, the gateway, and it's actually an image of a gate. Opening the Zohar, making it available to the world, printing it for the first time.
Matt's new translation and commentary promised to once again make the Zohar more accessible. It may never be as popular as the Torah, Judaism's most revered book, but the stories and teachings are beginning to reach a larger Jewish community. Matt's lyrical interpretation makes the exploration possible. Two friends strolling through Palestine's Galilee region. bumping into strange and mythical characters. Along the way, the friends discuss the Torah line by line and offer novel, mystical explanations.
For just now, the whole way here, I was pestered by an old man, a donkey driver, who kept asking me riddles the whole way.
There was a man who lived in the mountains. He knew nothing about those who lived in the city. He sowed wheat and ate the kernels raw.
Who is a serpent that flies in the air and wanders alone, while an ant lies peacefully between its teeth?
So the Zohar is taking the foundational text of all Western religion, right? Taking the Bible and turning it into a mystical text, you know, transforming the meaning line by line and verse by verse. So it enables you to be part of Western religion and yet experience this radical, mystical rebirth.
Deep within the spark gushed a flow, splaying colors below, concealed within the concealed of the mystery of Ein Sof.
The Zohar's paradox is that it conveys an experience beyond language through words. You read it, you study it, and those who know it say its wisdom slowly trickles in.
The Zohar says a beautiful thing on the Garden of Eden, where the Bible says that God expelled Adam from the garden, and the Zohar says, who kicked whom out of the garden? Did God kick Adam out, and the Zohar does something very beautiful here. It says, or not. And as you're reading it, you can't help but think, wait a minute, the alternative is that Adam kicked God out? We kicked God out? And that's what the Zohar is teaching. We've lost touch with that original oneness, and that's what it means to be expelled from the garden. And there's a way to recover that. There's a way to find our way back to that harmony through love, through spiritual awareness, through quieting down the busy mind. And the Zohar enables you or challenges you to do that.
Scholars say it will likely take many more books to recognize all of the Zohar's messages. But more than 700 years after it was written, Daniel Matt's translation makes that possible. In Berkeley, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.